I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 414. I can't suspend my disbelief for a cockatoo. To Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I am Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hey, ho, ho, ho.
How was your week?
Tiringly awesome.
That's good. Tiringly awesome.
Like, I was way too tired, but it was for awesome things. So
that balances it then, because if you're tired because of awesomeness, then that makes it a great week.
It's a great awesome. If you're tired because you're miserable and depressed, it's not a very good.
Yeah, that's the bad thing, and that's when you need to make good life choices.
That's when you have to take NAPs.
Oh, don't say NAPs.
NAP, yeah, you know me.
You know, I really wish that, like, as
you were
adults,
a little bit taller.
No, stop it.
You wish you were a baller?
No.
A shot caller?
No. I don't wish that I had a girl who looked good, because I would call her. I wouldn't.
What about a six-inch Apollo? I always thought it was a six-inch Apollo.
What the hell is an Apollo? Is that like an Apache, like, but smaller?
No, the car. The Apollo?
Impala. Impala.
Oh. Apollo. A six-inch Apollo, lady.
Yeah, 64 Impala is what he's saying.
Oh, I thought it was six-four
Impala. Not
a six-floor apartment.
No. 64 Impala.
Education.
Something like that. I don't know exactly what, but something like that. No, my week was pretty good. I actually did more gaming than I expected to.
Oh my god.
This week. I thought it was really going to be like a very heavy anime week.
Did you play Unity a lot?
I did. I've gotten further in Unity.
How's that Destiny addiction?
No, I'm still scratching that itch. Like, I'm not going to lie. Because I'm talking about Destiny, no surprise. So, this week, Bungie put out a notice of a patch that they were doing, and things that are coming. The Dark Below is coming.
Which
guess
I thought
what?
Was the the unrecorded Outkast album.
No, that would be The Love Below.
No, that was Andre.
Yes, I know.
But
I'm
they're
making
both
the
Dark
joke.
Brothers, yeah, I, and it's yeah, the I know below, where you were going. It's underground.
I know where you were going. I was trying to move past the joke. You didn't
but
let
it was
that happen.
Funny.
It wasn't really funny.
It was giggle-worthy.
No, it wasn't, actually.
Whatever.
All right, so moving right along. And a lot of people got really excited. Like, basically, what they said in their note was, "Hey, guys, we realize that you've been grinding, like, a lot to try and level up, like, your really awesome gear. Exotics and raid gear. And it's really hard to always get Ascendant Shards to level that stuff up.
Oh, really? They've now brought it up?
Hold on. So, like, so we're gonna fix that. And basically, we're retooling things in this patch. So now, you'll be able to, one, purchase materials from Xur when he shows up. For marks, whether they're Crucible marks or Vanguard marks, so you won't have to necessarily always grind. So you'll be able to buy Spirit Bloom and Relic Iron.
But what about Ascendant Shards?
Hold on.
That's what I care about.
I'm getting to that. Hold up. And then we're retooling the upgrade path for weapons. And so you'll be able to do Relic Iron and weapon parts and things like that. For all upgrades to your weapons, except for the last upgrade, the final one that does the bad beefy. So you won't have to do Ascendant Charge for the last three dots.
Oh my god, thank god!
Hold on. For that last dot, what you'll have to do is purchase a Ascendant Exotic Shard. And those you'll only be able to purchase from Xur when Xur is there.
So weekends.
Yep. And it'll take basically your materials plus the exotic shard to do the final upgrade.
Okay.
And so people were like, fuck yes! And immediately jumped in, did the update, and started farming items so that they could beef up their exotics. Because you look at what it's going to take to do your exotic weapon, and you kind of cry inside a little bit.
I haven't looked at it yet.
Because most exotics take 7 shards.
Oh.
To do the upgrade plus the other materials.
Oh.
Yeah. So you're looking at 21 shards to do a full upgrade on the last 3.
Oh.
And that doesn't require, it doesn't count the 2 in the middle that you tend to have to do with the Ascendant shard. Yeah. So then, yeah. So that makes it like a 35 shard piece to upgrade one exotic all the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little painful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes one finger on your hand stand up a little bit more than another. Yeah. So Bungie fixed that. Right?
Okay.
So, like, even I jumped in and I found a picture of, remember that scene in Sister Act 2 where, Lauryn Hill, like, put her hand up and was like, yes.
Yes.
Praise. Okay, so I put that, I was like, praise Bungie. Right? Because I have, like, 4 or 5 different exotics that are basically...
I only have 2.
That are basically at the midpoint on upgrade, and I was not looking forward to the last upgrades. But I'm like, well, shit, now I just have to go and farm materials, Relic Iron and Spirit Bloom. I'm like, I got this, because I've been farming it forever. So I was real excited. There are some people who've been doing the raids like crazy, you know, your level 30 guys.
I still haven't even seen the Vault of Glass.
Who were, don't brag about that, you need to do it.
I'm not bragging.
Who were taking their duplicates of exotics and dismantling them. Because as you know, for any of your items above rare, when you dismantle them, you get legendary items. So when you dismantle a legendary weapon, you get ascendant shards for it. Just like when you would...
I still need fusion rifles.
What do you call it? And when you dismantle an exotic, now... you get an exotic shard. So everyone that had duplicates of things were immediately jumping in and dismantling that shit, taking it out of their vaults. Well, Bungie then came back.
Oh, no.
A couple days later and said, hey, whoa,
we didn't want you doing that.
No. Guys, we forgot to mention.
Of course they did.
That as part of this upgrade, when the Dark Below comes out, what's actually gonna happen is you can do your upgrade paths on your weapons and stuff, but anybody that's like done any things with the shards right now to an exotics, you're probably gonna be a little upset because it's not gonna count. Because what's gonna happen is when the Dark Below comes out, we're gonna reset everything to the low levels so that you can build it up through doing the Dark Below. And then what you're going to do is when you have an exotic weapon, you're going to go to Xur and you're gonna be like, hey, Xur, what's the exotic weapon upgrade this week? Then you can get the shard and upgrade that exotic. So if you've, like, already dismantled an exotic and used that shard to upgrade another one, it's actually not going to count because we're going to reset that gun when the DLC comes out back to 0.
So wait, everybody who has exotic weapons, they're gonna restart them?
Yeah.
But I'm only got one more on my last words.
Oh.
I have to do it all over again?
Yeah.
But I have, like, no glimmer.
Oh, it sucks to be you. Bungie, so sorry. So I had to take back my Hail Zombie and put out a Hail Bungie and put out a Fuck Bungie. Whoa, pump your motherfucking brakes.
Was that another picture of Lauryn Hill from Sister Act 2?
It was, as a matter of fact. That one when she has that sourpuss look?
Yeah, like...
Yeah.
When her mom told her that she could... my ass.
Yeah, when her mother told her that she couldn't go and she was all pissy. Yeah, that. So I was like, oh, Bungie giveth and Bungie taketh away. So, there are quite a lot of people who are very pissed because they have dismantled a shit ton of exotics.
Bungie, why you forsake me?
So forsaken.
Why you don't give me stuff?
So I'm telling people now...
Bungie's no working.
I would stop upgrading any exotics that you're upgrading right now.
That's, okay.
And I would not put any focus on them. And I wouldn't dismantle them.
Now, when is the Dark Below coming out?
Dark Below comes out on 12/9. But here's the thing. I have a feeling, just because this is such a fucked up thing to do, that it'll be one of those things that Bungie will end up fixing. Just like the fuck up that they did with the initial Iron Banner. Right. And then they came back and they fixed it and were like, yeah, we kind of messed that up, so we're going to fix it so that your rank and your weapons actually do
Iron Banner.
We apologize and we'll fix that. I have a feeling that this is going to be fixed because it's not right to have somebody have an exotic weapon that they've been beefing up for the last 2 months.
Right.
And because you're putting out new DLC, wipe all that and make them start from scratch.
You're right.
Like, that's the most anti-community thing to do. And the one thing that Bungie has desperately been trying to do is guide the game based on community feedback. So I have a feeling that this will be one of the things that, like, they said they were going to do this way, but when the thing actually comes out, it won't go that way. So I would just say for now, like, don't dismantle exotics to get that shard. If you have a shard, don't do that final upgrade. Wait and see what's going to happen, because you'll be real pissed if you beef that weapon out, and then in a week, it will actually, not a week, in a day now at this point, it won't count for anything. You'll have to start over from scratch. So don't waste your shards on it. Do acquire exotics. Don't worry about beefing them up.
So acquire exotics, disregard currency?
Acquire exotics, disregard upgrades.
Okay.
So I've been playing and I've been using some of my exotics just because they're some of my more high-powered weapons, but when it comes time to, like, turn in bounties and stuff, I've been switching to some of my legendary weapons so that they get the upgrade, because I don't think legendaries are going to get touched, and I'm just kind of leaving my exotics out of it right now.
Okay.
On the upgrade path. So that's my recommendation until this shit gets sorted out. But I do like the fact that they're now making all that grind time that you do really count, because material grinding now and money becomes a factor, because you're going to need money to buy materials, and you can use marks to buy materials, and it's materials now that really will define the majority of your upgrade path.
Materials.
Another thing that I think is great is that gear that you can acquire in Iron Banner and in the Queen's mission and in the Dark Below stuff is on par with raid gear. So all of that shit will allow you to get to 30 now.
Okay.
Although when the Dark Below launches on the 9th, the level cap's being raised, and so you'll be able to go to 32.
Woohoo! Well, I'm only 28, so
will be cool.
I'm having a hard time in my 28.
That's because you're not playing the game, so it's kind of hard to level if you're not doing things in the game to level.
You're right.
Because my Warlock is 27 and is, like, this close to being 28. So
Have you mastered your glide yet?
I have. I finally got the
yay! High five!
Level, I finally got the high level glide control, so I can now do the higher glide. I still misfire it sometimes because I think I'm a hunter, and then I go, "Oh wait, no, I can't do that. I'm a warlock right now." Whee! So that. But no, my warlock is finally coming together. I finally got a legendary helmet. So I'm not rocking blue gear across the board anymore, which is nice. So that's my Destiny update for this week. There'll be more Destiny update.
More
Destiny talk pretty much for the rest of the year, because Dark Below is going to be a big deal. Not only is there an additional...
I know, I watched the trailer, which I love the fact that they actually implemented that onto your map.
Yeah. I got mad excited for a hot second.
What is that? Is that something for me to play?
Same thing. I was like, it's my body's ready. And then it's like cinematic. And I was like, I don't care. I'm still posting a photo. I'm really excited about this.
And they're teasing it with, you know, things happening like on the face of like Earth and on the moon with the Crotas coming up.
Yes.
And you having a sword.
Have you picked up the sword yet?
Yeah.
I really want the sword now to be a subclass.
For who?
For everybody. It could be a subclass for everyone. First of all, we all have that third open spot in subclasses.
You're right.
They already have the animations for all types, Warlock, Titan, and Hunter, because anybody can pick up that sword in the mission.
Right.
So they already have the motions, the animations for all classes to use a sword. So how badass would it be? And the effect differs based off of the class that you pick. So, like, if you're a warlock, it does void damage. If you're a hunter, it does...
But that would be conflicting because, I mean, as a warlock, you have two classes. So either you'd have the sunny one or the void walker.
Yeah, but you already have two classes that can do fire damage. So the thing that is unique is that warlocks do fire or void. Hunters do fire or arc. And I forget what Titans do.
I don't know what Titans do.
Fire or something. So I think it's already set up so that way that the sword would glow based off of the color that you you pick. And I think that it would be cool. I would love to be able to swap to a sword class.
So,
anyway, but that's what I got for Destiny, but there'll be more Destiny stuff to talk about for sure.
I want to interject here.
Interject!
And talk about something that I've been playing recently before our communal topic. Because I think that's going to be the meat and potatoes of our show.
You think?
Yep.
With gravy. It's going to have gravy.
Oh, yeah.
Because it has to have
gravy. So we know... Or we should know that Pandalicious likes to,
Why do you talk about yourself in the third person?
Okay, we know that I...
Thank you.
Person.
Me.
Me.
Speaking.
The person, my voice. The active voice speaking right now.
Because I'm not royalty.
In my own mind, I am.
Whoa.
Fix that. Likes to play dating sims. Or likes to talk about animes that are based off dating sims.
Yes.
Or light novels.
We, the community, know this about you, the individual. Pandalicious,
a singular person. Yes. Grammar and syntax. Anyway, so I haven't played many dating sims in a while because, one, they eat up a lot of space on the laptop, and I had to move all of them over.
It's hard to find ones that are translated into English.
Well, that too.
And work on the Mac.
So the six that I own are on a hard drive, and I've played them all through all their arcs and stuff, so, like, I've had no reason to go back. But I haven't looked for any new ones because, like you said, like, licensing and censure, you know, getting here and getting them localized here is kind of a hard...
Distribution, localization, working on a Mac...
I mean,
there's so many hurdles.
A lot of people, like, the few that I have were all fan subs.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't even, like, a legit distribution of the game.
As much as a thing that wound up on your computer
somehow.
Say,
hey, this game thing works. I'll play it.
It installed itself, officer. I don't even know.
Like, I didn't do it. I thought it was an email, and it said,
and then the next
click yes, there was this thing.
And I clicked yes because I'm a positive person. And then
I don't like to say no.
The next thing I know, this thing is just there.
But
amazing. It's magic.
So, since this is the holiday of gift giving,
were gifted one.
I was gifted this treat.
I wouldn't necessarily call it a gift. I would also not necessarily call it a treat. But that's just my thoughts.
Well, here we go. So, it's a dating sim.
By the way, you sound like Vanessa Bear when you say that like that.
What?
Oh, but here we go. Like. Seriously.
I wish I had her talent. But anyway, so the game was actually published by Digital Revolver. And I think we're actually going to get... It's on Steam and it's on GOG.
Yep.
Which is where the gifting took place.
Uh-huh.
Because this dating sim is actually made for... the PC, and for Linux, and also for Macs.
What? It's on the Trinity.
It is. And it looked all happy, and it's called Hotiful Boyfriend, which it seemed like something I would be all about until I clicked Start Game. And in the game, my character, who is female, so it's a reverse harem set dating sim.
Sounds good so far. Reverse harem, I'm down.
And it's my character, who you get to name, first name and last, and I named my character Hikari Kojima.
Aww.
I did.
Kojima Light. That's nice.
He'll never know, but
he'll
it's okay. And it's
he
my,
probably shouldn't know.
No. Especially when he finds out what dating sim, yeah. Anyway, so... It's my semester. I'm a sophomore at Saint Pigeon's High School Academy, which is the world's, not just Japan's, but the world's greatest school for gifted birds.
Wait.
Birds.
I just want to clarify this real
birds.
So you
I
are a sophomore?
I'm a sophomore.
At a gifted school.
For birds.
For birds.
For birdies.
Avian.
Yep.
Flying with
poultry.
With the wings.
Fowls.
Yep.
Birds.
And the feathers.
Yep. And the quacking and the clucking and the cock-a-doodle-dooing.
And the pecking birds.
Birds.
Not people dressed up.
No,
birds.
I thought it might be a furry thing, but it's
completely
birds.
You. Oh, okay.
So I'm talking about my experience in the first semester, my first there as a freshman, and how great it was, and how I'm so ready to, like, go through this year. Uh-huh. And at the end of this whole monologue.
At the Bird Academy.
At the Bird Academy.
Okay.
And the last sentence is, I'm really excited to be here, even though I'm the only human here.
Wait. Okay, I call time out.
Okay.
You're a sophomore.
I'm a sophomore.
At Bird Academy. And I, the player, are not a bird.
Am not a bird. I'm a female human.
You are a female human.
I'm the only. All right,
now let's go back, because, again, I hit pause. You're a female human.
Yep.
At Bird Academy.
Bird Academy.
Sophomore year.
Yep.
Dating Sim.
Which means, at the end of this game, I will have developed an emotional and possibly physical bond.
No.
With a bird.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
That fucked up. I'm stamping this one. We don't even have to get any further.
No, we do.
You can. I'm telling you right now, I'm stamped this. Ninja says, that's fucked up.
It's cute.
But no, that's fucked up. That's fucked up. I stamped it. Ninja says, that's fucked up.
So let me explain.
Sure. Go right ahead.
What I can
about
explain.
About how you're going to play this dating sim.
Oh, I'm going to. I'm already invested.
Are a human trying to conquest birds. Please, by all means.
Yeah, my conquests are birds. However, to help with the mating with the birds.
I can't.
Game, at the beginning, in your first term, asks you if in your first term, whenever you encounter the birds, that they also show you what their human form, if they were human. Granted, they're not. They are birds. All
right, so it's not like they're birds that could transform into humans.
No, they are birds.
So it tries to give you an out and make you feel better about trying to basically bed these birds as a human by saying, but if it was a dude,
if it was a human dude, this is what he would look like.
But he's not, because he's a bird.
Right. So when they show the picture of the animated version of the boy of the bird, they also show an actual picture of an actual bird. And the picture of the bird is who you encounter when you have your conversation.
I can't. Panda, I'm sorry, I can't.
So in my first term, like literally it goes from April 8th to like summer like that. Like literally they're just throwing these birds at you and you're just talking to birds. And then they open up.
Panda. Oh my
god. Wait, there's more. There's so much more.
There is.
And at some point, they open up your stat chart, and at the start, you have a physical endurance of 800, like your constitution's like 800, your hit points, essentially.
Yeah.
And then you have the ability to go to certain classes that will give you wisdom, which is math class, and music gives you charisma.
Uh-huh.
Now, your vitality is like 800, and at the start, your wisdom's at like a 2, and your charisma's at like a 5. And by going to certain classes...
Have to do a lot of math class.
A lot of math class. And the funny thing is, because I was playing, you know, based off of what I would want to do in my high school life and not what I actually did in high school life. And, like, I was just going to music class all the time, and I had, like, so much charisma, but they don't tell you that in that first term, you're going to have, like, 3 math tests. And I was like, duh, math? And, like... And one of the birds, who I believe is a potential conquest, is your homeroom teacher.
I can't. Go ahead.
And he's just like, Kojima, you need to do better. I'm a bird. And it's a serious looking like bird. Like, it's got serious bird face. So you're kind of like, it's always staring at me. This bird is judging me. This bird is my mentor, and I can't. Like, I felt bad. And then I started going to math class. And I managed to pass the final because I had a wisdom of like 12, which I guess was a pretty simple final.
We are talking about birds.
I'm still only in the first term, and I know once I hit the second term, that's when, if I've made enough single choices to one bird, I'll be able to go down that conquest path. And I'll get more backstory.
So that you can bed the bird.
So I can bed the bird. Follow that bird to bed.
Oh my god.
Anyway. No. So I want to talk a little bit about the types of birds.
Oh.
That we encounter. I've encountered.
I feel so dirty. I feel so dirty.
So, for one, the first bird you encounter is an actual pigeon. And his name's Ryota, and he's pretty much like your childhood friend. You've been friends with him since the day he hatched, because you know what? You're human. So, like,
I'm trying to go along with this.
I'm trying to do this with a straight face, and it's not helping. You're not helping.
I can't.
But he's like your childhood friend. You know, apparently, I haven't even told you the best part. So
the bedding of bird conquest is not the best part.
No.
Do tell.
So, I've been accepted to this prestigious bird academy.
Uh-huh.
You know, and, like, I guess I don't pay tuition, but they also don't give me room and board because all the rooms are, like, cages for, you know, birds.
For birds, right.
So, uh-huh. I live on campus in a cave.
You live in a cave.
I live in it.
So on campus.
It was funny because it's like, oh, it's time for me to go home. And it like flashes.
So you're
like
the cave girl.
I'm a cave girl.
Trying to fuck birds.
Trying to screw birds. And yeah.
Yep, you're right. That is the best part.
It's so cool because I go home to a cave and then I contemplate my day. And like I don't know where my money is. And I always have like energy bars. And like Ryota, my like childhood friend bird, is always like, your food is horrible. Like, that's not how you should eat. You should eat a real meal. And then the bird makes me an actual full, like, bento box meal. And, like, they show the picture, and I'm like, how can a bird do this?
Birds can't make rice balls.
No, they can't. They would eat all the rice, and then their stomachs would expand and blow up because it's not cooked. But in a fantasy world, birds can do anything. Also, birds can murder.
Dun, dun, dun. So I can't. No, so I'm sorry.
One of the conquests that I know he's a conquest option is the doctor. So instead of the traditional female doctor / nurse in the infirmary at
school. Right, you have the male doctor.
You have a male doctor in the infirmary. And his name is Dr. Shu.
Yeah.
And he is a partridge. He's not even a pigeon.
Oh, well, we've stepped our game up.
But it's weird because, like, when you show the picture, which I'm going to put in the show notes, because he's a scary fucking looking bird. And so when I first saw him, I'm like, oh, no.
So don't tap that. Don't tap that.
No.
Don't tap scary bird.
Spoilers. He has a murderous arc. So, and I'm going to talk about that because it's the most interesting part. And eventually in one of my files, I'm going to do the path because I want full completion. But when you first meet him, when they give you his flavor text, they're literally like, you know, even the birds at Bird Academy don't like to go to him when they're sick because some of the birds have gone missing after seeing him, you know, but you're like, oh, well, I'm a human. Nothing can happen to me because, you know, you're kind of dumb as fuck. I mean, you are at Bird Academy.
Yeah.
You're clearly not the smartest human.
Well, it's prestigious for birds. It's actually, like,
really
special education for humans.
But when you first encounter him, like, because you're looking...
probably explains why you want to do one of them.
Well, that's the thing. Apparently, you know, going back, I'll go to this and then back. There is the option where you don't form any romantic ties to the birds. And I've heard that, actually, it's a pretty gruesome end for you if you don't do a bird. So you kind of have to, if you want to live, you have to establish a romantic bond with them, with a bird.
Yeah, no, I tap out. I tap out.
But going back to the scary doctor bird, in his arc, when you pursue him, because he does say he says creepy things to you right off the bat. And when you see this partridge, you'll be like, nope. Because he's got weird squinty red eyes. And even his human version, you know he's
fucked up. You know
when
I would say no to doing a bird?
Every time.
As soon as I hit start, it was like, all right, here we are at Bird Academy. I'd be like, and here we go with the quit button.
I can. It was a gift. So I have to see
you
this
know,
through.
No. Sometimes. Sometimes with a gift, Panda, you just go, oh, thank you so much for the thought. And you never touch it again.
Going back to Dr. Shu's arc. If you decide you're going to romance Dr. Shu, which I don't recommend doing, at least in your first game. Have a good one. Have a safe romantic.
Yeah, don't fuck the pigeon. Well, maybe fuck the pigeon. Don't fuck the partridge.
Don't
fuck the partridge.
Because he'll murder you. Because what happens is, because you're the only human, you're an interesting specimen in the way that Dr. Stylish from Akame ga Kill mm-hmm. kind of looks at people as subjects and wants to do tests and stuff.
Yes.
So more of your conversations with him, he's like, oh, I wish I could see what happens if you took this thing, or what if I put this pill in you? And you're like, oh, that's so funny. And he's like, no, really. I wonder what would... Like, he wants to experiment on you. And if things go right or wrong in human world...
She's doing air quotes.
When things go the way that they're going to go at the end of stuff, you're pretty much willing to do just about anything for, you know, your love, Dr. Shu, the partridge. And he cleaves you and dissects you. And you die for your love of birds.
And that's why bird love is wrong.
Bird love is wrong, unless you're a bird.
See, that's how avian flu started. So...
But needless to say, really, I mean, the pacing of the story is really good, which I like.
There's a story? Yeah. I really didn't pick up on a story. Here's what I heard. Blah, 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 blah. Human fucks bird. Blah, 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 blah.
Human girl at school, like human, like girl high school experience with boys that are birds.
No, no.
With male birds.
Thank you. There you go.
Yeah,
male birds. Yeah, and not boys that are birds.
No,
they weren't boys no. turned into birds.
Male,
cause,
no.
Because I maybe could, like, suspend my disbelief for that. That everybody was just magically turned into.
And there's a male bird type for everyone.
And like, if that happened, and I'm supposed to find the one that I'm destined to love because when I kiss him, like the frog prince, he'll turn back into a boy. Okay.
I really wish that were the case, but it's not.
But no. So,
they're birds.
Ready? That's fucked up.
there is your childhood best friend bird. That's the your first bird friend that you encounter. And then there's a rich nudie bird who gets transferred to your school.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he doesn't...
Did you say nudie?
Snooty.
Oh, I heard nudie.
Snooty.
And I'm like, what? And he's like, wait, do the birds wear clothes?
No, they're birds. When you see their human forms are all wearing clothes.
No, doesn't count. Does not count.
The actual bird that you're having the conversation with is an actual bird. Like, the snooty bird is a, they call them a fantail dove. And he, his name's Sakura, and he is, or Sakuya, and he is snooty and wants nothing to do with commoners, and he doesn't even care that you're human, you're not, like, of rich blood, so he wants nothing to do with you. He has a brother who goes to the school, his name's Yuya, and he's kind of like a womanizing man whore.
Kinda?
Yeah, and he's already all about your non-bird lady bits. Like, he kind of wants it bad. So, like, he's always trying to find ways to come and talk to you. And, yeah, like, all the time. And he's also a fantail dove.
Uh-huh.
But they're different doves. And, like, they have a brother tension that I think in the romance arc you'll actually help patch. And that's where the... will happen.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know. This is just I'm just guesstimating. Then there's...
So you're going to be a bridge between two doves. But, got it?
Yep. You're going to bring peace to two doves.
Uh-huh.
You
are.
And then there is
with your vagina. Continue.
Yeah. And then there is
with
your...
With the birds.
Then
the doves.
Then there's your nerdy, quiet bookworm dove. And he's a morning dove, which... Popular fact. Morning doves are very rare in Japan. There aren't many. They're not in the natural migration pattern of the birds of Japan. But here in America, we got morning doves pretty much out our butts, like they're everywhere. We had one outside of Esh House that just kept cooing in the morning.
Yeah.
So, like, we have them. So as soon as I saw it, I was like, that's a morning dove. I didn't know they had those in Japan. Oh, wait, they really don't. So I'm like, oh, he must be a foreigner. Because they don't have morning doves there.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
he's the American.
Well, that's the thing. He's who I'm pursuing right now because he's pretty much like, I just like books. I don't like people and I don't like other birds. I'm always here in the library. Don't talk to me. So I purposely went and got a job in the library. So I'm always in the library. So he just has to fucking deal until he falls in love with me. And that's just how that's going to go.
Right.
Sorry.
Because you really need this morning dove to fall in love with you.
I need to fall in love with a bird so that I do not meet a grisly fate.
Uh-huh.
I need that bird dick. In the way that no human has ever needed a bird dick.
I can't.
The like I said, the dialogue pacing is good. The transitions between pictures of the actual birds in conversation for dialogue is a little slow. They have really great cues for sound because there is no talking. It's pretty much like Link style of talking, like a random hee-hee or a ha-ha or a shink or stuff like that, which is very common in dating sims anyway. So, if you have a PC that runs, you know, Windows, Linux, or Mac, and you have a flair for the dating sim, and you're not adverse to falling in love and having a physical intimacy with birds,
bestiality,
then Hotiful Boyfriend will be right up your nest. And apparently some of these birds say really crazy, fucked up things. I have not encountered...
Oh, really?
I haven't encountered any of that yet, but I've heard that certain ones down the path get a little crazy. Kind of like school days crazy. Which I'm looking forward to
this
encountering.
This whole thing is school days crazy. You're trying to fuck
a bird. I'm trying to fall in love with a bird.
No, you're trying to bang a bird. It's a dating sim.
I'm trying to fall in love with a bird.
It's a game. You're not falling in love with a bird. You're playing a game where you need to bang a bird in order not to die.
Well, my character doesn't know that she's in danger of not.
But you do, and you're the player. Because your character is not alive. You are controlling the character. So once again, let's roll this down.
I'm trying to fuck birds.
Thank you.
To survive.
Thank you. I just need you to say that
Hunger
out loud.
Bird games.
Yep.
Battle Royale birds.
Yep, there you go. There
but
you
with
go.
Fucking instead of yep. killing. Yeah, well, it depends on which arc you're in.
It's bird days.
Since it's holiday, you can get this game that's initially, generally $15. You can get it for $7.99 on GOG. And on Steam, I think it's $9.99. So, you could go and have,
Bird escapades
of the sexual type. I'm enjoying it. I'm not afraid or embarrassed to admit it. Thank you, boyfriend, for giving me this game for the holidays. I love it so much.
Your face is priceless. I almost wish we were doing video right now. Almost.
The sick perverted smile that the boyfriend had on his face when I saw that he had gifted me the game is probably why he did it.
You think?
Because he knew I would have to play it.
Yes.
And he knew I would have to sit through banging birds.
Yep.
I would have to consciously set my character up.
Yep.
To fall in love and then open her legs. For a bird that could fit most likely in her vajay hole. And there's nothing I can do about it.
Nope.
That is the purpose of the game.
And that is a thing that you must
pursue. A bird in the vagina is worth two in the bush.
I cannot. Oh.
It's too bad that there aren't any twin birds.
No, it's not too bad that there aren't any twin birds.
Because then there'd be two birds in the vagina worth four in the bush.
No.
So, how to two boyfriend?
No. I reject.
Objection.
Objection.
But that's what I've been playing recently.
Okay, well,
let's talk about other games.
Yeah. So guess what? My Destiny addiction, totally don't feel bad about it anymore.
Nope, because I'm fucking birds.
Yep. So deal with it. Destiny, I shoot shut. I feel so much better about my life.
I shoot bird semen in my vagina.
Oh my god.
Kid tested, pen approved.
I can't. Alright, you know what?
Let's talk about the Game Awards.
That's a horrible transition. My god. Okay, the Game Awards.
Well, you don't want to talk about fucking birds anymore,
I
so
don't.
We might as well talk about the Game Awards.
I need to, like, actually switch my track of brain thought now, because...
Bird fucking, fuck, birds. And now every time you see a bird, you're gonna be like...
Exactly, every time I'm gonna see a pigeon, I'm like, That pigeon looks like that pigeon that Amanda is trying to bang.
Oh my god, have you seen the picture of Ryota?
Stop it! Alright, let's move on.
Okay.
Gears switching. So, Game Awards. Alright, let's talk about that. Vegas. Games. Not
Twitch.
Birds.
Streaming.
Yeah, YouTube.
No birds.
Okay, so, actually there was a bird. It was an eagle. Alright, moving on.
Oh, there's one in the
Stop
game!
Stop it! Stop it. So, I watched, and Panda watched the restream, but I watched live the Game Awards, which is Jeff Keighley's new Game Awards show. You know, we all have our opinions about the VGXs and things that happened between Viacom and Spike and what it turned into and what it should have been. The Game Awards is Jeff's attempt to create a new video game award show and event that really was focused more on, and he said it himself in opening up the show, which I thought was great, is kind of a mix of a video game awards show and a little E3. So it was going to be some, hey, here's some premiere videos, some gameplay, some live performance, and ultimately rewarding the industry and even members of the community. Because there were some fan awards that people were able to vote on using social media live for things like Best Esports Player and Best Esports Team. So it was an attempt at creating something that was a little bit of the best of the industry, if you will.
Okay. And with all the shit going on, we need something positive.
We need something like that, you know, because the VGX has just turned into whoever threw the most money at Spike for holding the show tended to clean up house, surprisingly.
Wasn't that Rockstar last year at the VGX?
Moving right along. So, hey, here's the breakdown. As far as categories went, you had, and I've lost my one, there it is. Because I have notes. Because this really is a big deal.
She prepared in a way I didn't.
I'm mad prepared for this. So I want to start with indie game. Because one, we love the indies.
I've got that.
And two, we love the indies.
So let me look at Best Independent Game. Here were the nominees, and I'll share the winner at the end.
Yeah.
So the nominees were Broken Age. That was out of Double Fine.
Good.
Monument Valley,
which I fucking love.
I haven't played it.
You need to play it.
Shovel Knight, which I did play and love.
Yep.
Transistor, which got a lot of praise and acclaim.
Yep.
And The Vanishing of Ethan Carter, which I also have not played, but it's on my list to play because it's totally up my alley. So of all those independent games...
Is The Vanishing out yet?
The Vanishing is out.
Okay.
It just released right in time to get a nomination.
I was about to say, because I thought that that one...
It just recently came out. It just magically made time for nomination. but anyway, so of all those games, which I played a chunk of them, they all, I definitely feel, definitely earned their nomination.
Yep, there's nothing in that group that I was like, doesn't belong.
Right. And the winner was Shovel Knight.
And so here's the thing. Like, I went back and forth as I was watching the show, and I was like, Shovel Knight was the bomb. Monument Valley is also the bomb. So I was like, if either of those take it, I'll be really, really happy. But I'll be honest with you, I really thought Transistor was going to take it.
I actually kind of thought so, too.
Yeah.
Because of, I mean, don't get me wrong, Shovel Knight got a whole lot of attention, but, like, Transistor kind
blew
of
blew up.
It
took over.
It was like a meteorite. And I think that's the thing, it misguided people because, like, it burned really brightly and it kept people's attention. And then right near the end of stuff, it kind of just took that one step back.
Well, Transistor is a great game.
I know.
It's a shit ton of fun to play. But I think, like, in this group, there's just, I think Shovel Knight has just a little bit of edge for the nostalgia piece.
It does.
That I think that's kind of what carried it over.
I feel like it's a little bit more approachable to, you know, casual, habitual,
yeah,
and also hardcore gamers who have an appeal for the nostalgia.
Yeah.
Whereas Transistor, while beautiful and definitely caught everyone's attention, not everyone was like, I don't know if
it's
I can play this
game. It's not a
game
that everybody can jump into, yeah,
and feel confident playing.
Yeah, but
so
that's
I think
not
that's,
the case. Yeah, with
and I think
much.
That's why it just barely, like, it missed the win.
Yep. But it was still pretty flippin' sweet.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about, I don't really need to talk about Best Action Game, because like, you have them all. I basically have, like, three, and then, like, the fan stuff, and we're not talking about the fan stuff. So we split up notes. But, like, for...
Well, no, we can talk a little bit about...
All right, best, so talk first...
We can talk about
Best action game. Who are the nominees?
The nominees was Alien Isolation.
Yep.
Assassin's Creed Unity.
Uh-huh.
Bayonetta 2.
Yep.
Middle Earth, Shadow of Mordor, and yep. Sunset Overdrive.
Okay, so let's talk about this, like, just real quick. Okay, first and foremost, as far as, like, best action gamer, and guys, you're gonna pop a nut here, but just...
Pop a nut!
Stick with me. I am an Assassin's Creed freak. I don't think that Assassin's Creed should have been nominated for
best action. No, I don't think so either.
Not Unity.
No.
It's a good game.
And with you saying that, now that makes me feel confident in saying, like, I'm a big fan of survival horror. We know this.
Yep.
I'm always in support of seeing them get recognition for what they do best.
Yep.
While I understand that Alien Isolation had a lot of action elements to it, people weren't talking about its action.
Yep.
They were always talking about its element of fear and suspense. Yep. So it feels more like a survival horror game to me.
I agree with you.
Than an action game. So I don't actually think it should have been in there either.
Yep. Now,
with that in mind.
With that in mind, then the category then becomes between Bayonetta 2, Shadow of Mordor, and Sunset Overdrive. There's no way that Shadow of Mordor doesn't win. Which is why it won.
And it did win. And here's why I feel like it...
Because you can't compare a Bayonetta 2 to a Shadow of Mordor.
You can't. And the thing about it, because I've played some of Shadow of Mordor, and I've seen some of it played, it has so many different elements of action. Like, it has the RTS, so you've got that kind of overhead. You've got mm-hmm. that actual action where you're actually in the realm doing these contract hits. And mm-hmm. essentially, Shadow of Mordor is just assassins, but in Mordor.
Yep.
You're climbing buildings, you're stealth killing.
Yep.
You're doing all the things yep. that you're, I think, essentially...
Except it's good.
Except, yes, Shadow Mordor is a lot better than Unity. I will give you that. Yep. And Sunset Overdrive, while I do like the action, a lot of the action was really repetitive and got kind of stale. I mean, it's fun,
mm-hmm.
but that's all it is. It's like you have two girlfriends. You have two friends that you kind of think you have crushes on.
Right.
And, like, one is, like, super fun and you can spend all this time with and, like, you think something could happen. And then there's that one you're like, I really want something to happen with B over A.
Mm-hmm.
But you're always with A because you have so much fun. So, mm-hmm. like, you don't make a decision because you kind of feel bad that you're going to make a decision that's obviously going to hurt one over the other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I feel like Sunset Overdrive is. It's fun, but that's it. That's yeah. the substance. It's fun.
Yeah. Alright, so, again, no surprises there. Shadow of Mordor
right.
wins, and it should have, so that...
Can we talk a little bit about the best fighting game?
Sure.
A little bit.
What do you want to talk about?
Well, alright, so let me tell you the nominees,
okay.
and then at the end, I'll once again tell you the winner.
Okay.
So the nominees were Killer Instinct, Season 2.
Yep.
Persona 4 Arena.
Ultimax.
Yeah. Super Smash Bros. For the 3DS.
Yep.
Super Smash Bros. For the Wii U.
Yep.
And then Ultra Street Fighter 4.
Yes. Roman numerals for the win, Panda.
I'm like, my brain. So
who do you think should have won?
Okay, well, I do believe Smash Bros.
Mm-hmm.
deserved the win. What I don't agree with is that it got two nominations because of the different platforms.
Well, but...
I don't... Not... And here's my thing.
Okay.
Because, like, I know Super Smash Bros. For the 3DS 1 came out before the Wii U.
Yes.
But when that happened, there were so many problems with the game on that platform.
Uh-huh.
Because that platform is not designed... For
a battle arena, yeah.
For that type of fighting game.
Yeah.
I don't know why they did that route. Maybe for just early exposure of the game. But the game doesn't change between the 3DS and the Wii U. So it should have just been either the 3DS version or the Wii U version. They shouldn't have been able to take up two slots.
Okay, I don't disagree with you there. It should have just been one slot
one.
For Smash Brothers 3DS / Wii U.
Whatever. Doesn't matter what platforms. But, so I dislike that they did that, because one, it gives them more favor of a chance for a win, ratio-wise.
Well, yeah.
Right. But it's that doesn't feel right to me. Not that I have any issues with Killer Instinct, because I don't. I appreciate that they brought it back and remastered, you know, they gave it new life.
Yes.
Which I appreciate. I've never been a fan of the Persona fighting games, so I really don't.
I don't have anything against the Persona fighting games.
Like, if we but hang out, I would hang out.
But I don't
like,
go out of my way to play them.
Like, if Persona 4 invited me to a party, I'd probably come in the middle, eat some snacks, and leave.
And this is going to hurt some people's souls, especially because I'm a big fighter fan.
I know. But, here it comes. But
I'm not... I haven't been impressed with a Street Fighter game in the last 2 years. So, okay. I like, out of all of those games, if I was going to pick one, to be honest with you, I probably would have gone with Super Smash Bros. As well, out of all of them. Even though, like, everything in me is just like, Killer Instinct. At least it's a real fighter.
Right. I mean, Smash Bros. Is really just, I'm going to button mash and step on you until you fall off the...
Smash Bros., to do it really, really well, there's a lot of skill and a lot of things that you need to master on all things that are going on there. My problem with Smash Bros. Is, to me, it feels more like a brawler than it does feel like a fighter. Because you have multiplayer. It's not just you, player one versus player two. It is, in fact, player one versus players 2 through 7.
Yeah.
If you do it the big way. And right. Then that just becomes chaos. And there, it's a lot more about dodging effectively.
Right.
And managing traffic than necessarily...
It's really about evading and waiting for people who hit a certain amount of damage and then taking the highest damage person
out. As opposed to learning how to master combos, counters, and those kinds of things.
You're right.
So I don't really count it in the fighter block.
Okay.
But out of everything in that list, I frankly was disappointed with Season 1 of Killer Instinct. It left a nasty taste in my mouth. Season 2, I think, fixed some of those things and addressed them.
Not enough to seal a win.
At the time, it was like a little bit too late. Like, I have Season 2, haven't played it.
Okay. That says enough to me.
And I love fighters. So
Games for Change. Here were the nominees. There was Mountain.
Yep.
Never Alone. The Last of Us Left Behind, which is the DLC where you play a lot of stuff with Ellie.
Yep.
This War of Mine and Valiant Hearts The Great War.
This is a fantastic category. And I think that more shows, award shows that come up for the industry should have a category like this.
I agree.
Because, like, to me, more so than really game of the year, like, this category is the most meaningful to me out of the whole show. And I love the fact that Valiant Hearts won it. I really wish that all the games really could have won something, because this War
of Mine... They all promote something really good.
They really do. Like, this War of Mine is...
I haven't played it.
It's phenomenal. You really should. It's...
Because, I mean, out of all these games, I've played Never Alone, The Last of Us Left Behind, and Valiant Hearts.
Yep, so I have played this War of Mine. I've played Valiant Hearts. I have not played Never Alone. However, I've read a lot of stuff. We've talked about it.
Yeah.
They're all amazing games, and it was just so cool to see Valiant Hearts. Because I've said it before when we talked about it on the show, I finished Valiant Hearts, and it emotionally moved me.
It did. Oh, my God. It gripped me in a way that, like, a really good book.
Yeah. It really did.
We'll get to me.
All right, so let's talk about a couple of mine over here. Because I want to blow through them really, pretty quickly. Best Online Experience, the nominees were Call of Duty, Advanced Warfare, Dark Souls 2, Destiny, Hearthstone, Titanfall. Destiny took it. I agree with this one, actually. And not just because I'm a Destiny freak. I played Titanfall, and I did play it online.
And I know you enjoyed Titanfall, too.
I did enjoy Titanfall, but as far as, like, the online experience goes, even getting kicked to orbit as often as I had, I've talked about this on the show, I've definitely made more partnerships and just had more community interaction even before they turned on the ability to just talk to everybody in a fire team, not just people that you're friends with. There's so much more community where I've ended up, like, doing runs for materials, and other players will start pointing things out to me that I'm missing and directing me, even though it gets them nothing. It's definitely a much different online experience than these other games.
Right.
And I completely agree that it is a great online experience if you can get and stay online. And then you have Best Shooter. And this was a category that, for the first time in years, I was actually very interested in seeing how it was going to shake out, because this was really going to be kind of like the barometer for me of whether or not this show was rigged. So your nominees were Call of Duty Advanced Warfare, no surprise, Destiny, Far Cry 4, again, no surprise, Titanfall, and Wolfenstein The New Order. So this is one of the ones that actually divided the team here at ESH, because KBD was really pulling for Wolfenstein, and I love Wolfenstein New Order. I think that it is a phenomenal game. As far as being the best shooter, I don't know that Wolfenstein, for the shooting aspect, by itself, is better than any of the counterparts in
the lineup.
In all honesty, I kind of wanted Wolfenstein for narrative, because I think that it's the best story that a Wolfenstein game has ever carried through, the emotion.
But pieces. Out of everyone who was in best narrative, do you think it had the best narrative?
I don't think that it had the best chance to win narrative. But
you I
would have liked to have seen. And the nod was the nomination, but like, the guilty pleasure in me really wanted Wolfenstein to like be the upset and take it out of that category.
I don't think we had any strong sleepers this year.
We really didn't have any strong sleepers, and we didn't really have any big upsets, in all honesty, for the show. But I would have liked that, because I think Wolfenstein The New Order was a surprise to everyone. For so many of us who like had Wolfenstein set in our minds of what it was, this was a much more emotionally charged, plot-driven Wolfenstein, and I would have liked to see that be rewarded.
Okay.
That's not to say, because there are other award shows that are going to happen, that it's not going to get acknowledgement, but I really would have liked it for that more so than just the shooter.
Okay.
Because I think it's kind of easy and so on the nose to be like, Wolfenstein, best shooter. Like, it defined the genre.
It
should be a good shooter. The winner was actually Far Cry 4, and this is one of the ones that, like, a little bit surprised me. Not so much an upset, because I think everybody in the room was like, Far Cry 4 is going to take it. Just because the competition really was between Far Cry and Call of Duty, as far as I'm concerned. And there's a lot of people throwing a lot of shade on Call of Duty. I think there's a lot of people that are burnt out on Call of Duty, and when you take a look at... And when you take a look at who the jury was, and you think of the reviews that some of those websites...
Why couldn't Call of Duty make a spoof game where it was about rushing to a toilet because you have to poop?
Because
Call of Duty. It's like all the duty calls!
That would be Call of Dookie.
Duty. Alright, I've got the last bit, so I'll hand that over to you
so we can talk about that jointly. Alright, we'll take that.
So, let's talk best narrative.
Alright, so, best narrative. The nominees were South Park, The Stick of Truth, The Walking Dead Season 2, The Wolf Among Us, Valiant Hearts The Great War, and Wolfenstein The New Order. So to your question about Wolfenstein and best narrative, I do think the narrative in Wolfenstein is better than Wolf Among Us. The game, not the comics that it's based off of.
Yep, the game. You saw me seizing for a second.
Because what we're talking about is best narrative in the game. Not in its source material.
That's all right, because I'm going to preface this with the same fact that, once again, we've got one single company, Telltale, in this case, getting two nods. I don't believe that is fair. They should have took the best of the one of the two.
Well, but the games are so different, and their stories are so different.
I understand that, but...
It's one thing to have the same game that's on two platforms take up two spots. It's another thing to have one studio that produces
two
independent great games.
Okay.
And they're both great games, so I don't knock them for that. What I will then again say, and I'm prefacing again, we're talking about the narrative in the game. I think that the Wolfenstein narrative is better than the South Park Stick of Truth narrative.
Okay.
Because the Stick of Truth narrative is pretty much on the nose. You're a new kid in the neighborhood, and everybody's playing this game.
Ooh. Right.
Right?
Right.
Like, it's not a moving narrative. It's just
okay,
the
setup. So we've talked.
All right,
so
think
Wolfenstein is better than The Wolf Among Us. And South Park.
Narrative in the game. Okay, again, narrative in the
Walking
game.
Walking Dead Season 2.
I can't speak to because I have not played the Walking Dead games.
All right, I have. But I've only played Season 1, and I haven't finished Season 2, but I'm in the middle of Season 2. And I haven't played Wolfenstein, so
yep.
I cannot speak
yep.
to both sides of that.
You should play Wolfenstein. You should.
Well, good thing is the Biffle bought it for the PS4.
Well,
so
there you go.
I can.
Good.
So, the last
game... Just the fucking opening alone. Tell me that it's not.
when I play it, I will talk to you. So then the last nomination was Valiant Hearts The Great War, which won
and best narrative. If we're narrowing down this category to between Wolfenstein and Valiant Hearts,
it's a win-win either way.
It's a win for Valiant Hearts, because, again, emotionally, that thing hit me.
You did not go from, and you didn't feel like you were just going through the motions in any of those chapters. They held you throughout that entire game.
And it was mostly the narrative.
And they gave you hope when you thought you really deserved hope, and they didn't hold your hand when you didn't have
it. But it really was a game that was driven by its narrative.
Yes, absolutely.
Not so much the action and interaction that was going on, because the action was very simplistic.
Yeah.
It's mostly a puzzle solver, but it was a puzzle solver emotionally driven by its style and its narrative.
Yes.
So for that, I'm like, if it's between that and Wolfenstein, yeah, completely.
And I believe that was out of Ubisoft Montpellier.
Yes.
So.
Or as they said, let's say, Montpellier.
Yeah.
So.
We're getting down the last two.
Completely aligned here. So, Developer of the Year. Mm. Your nominees were. Mm. Stop being Marge Simpson. Your nominees were Blizzard, Monolith, Nintendo, Telltale, and Ubisoft Montreal. All right. So, personally, out of this category, if I had to pick anybody, I probably... let me be, like, legit.
Be honest.
I wouldn't have picked any of them as Developer of the Year.
Okay.
Frankly, for me, and I love Ubi, and I love Nintendo, you know, Nintendo released Bayonetta 2, and I will forever be grateful to them for that, but I'm not a Blizzard fan.
Nope.
I don't like Hearthstone. I don't like World of Warcraft.
I know
that Hearthstone is, like, tearing up the esports world now and all that. Same here. Telltale, I think it is an amazing, amazing studio. I did enjoy Wolf Among Us, even though I have some issue.
It
got a little janky. I have not played The Walking Dead, but I have watched you play it, and it is Telltale is doing the damn thing on those games. Even though it's not my shit, I appreciate.
Don't
what
play Game
doing.
Of Thrones.
But Nintendo won, and
yeah,
that
I have no comment for that.
You know,
out of all of those, I don't feel Nintendo should have won that. If it were me, granted, I am not the whole conscious of the gaming industry. I do not run. I am not the little white blood cells in its body producing, you know, the things that make it feel better. But I would have loved to have seen Telltale or Ubisoft Montreal get that for their games.
Yep.
Just as an... I would have loved that to have been an upset.
I would have, like... If Ubisoft got it, I would just... Would have liked them to have gotten it for Black Flag and not for...
Yeah. Right.
All right. So, best independent game.
We've already talked about it, so now we need to talk about Game of the Year.
All right. Game of the Year. First of all, I only really have an objection to one of the nominees, but it's just a personal objection because if I think about it objectively as far as, like, moving the industry...
It did that thing.
So the nominees were Bayonetta 2, Dark Souls 2, Dragon Age Inquisition, Hearthstone, and Middle-earth Shadow of Mordor. Now... Again, I've said this before. The main reason that I bought my Wii U was just so I could play Bayonetta 2.
Yep.
I love that game. It's not Game of the Year.
No. Okay. Absolutely not.
It's not.
Dark Souls 2, something I can talk a little bit about because I'm kind of a big fan of the franchise.
Yeah.
While interesting, thought-provoking, difficult as fuck, challenging enough to make everybody at least want to attempt it, not accessible to everybody.
Yep. Which, so, in my mind, knocks it out of...
In my mind, for Game of the Year, everyone has to want to play it.
Yep.
Not a particular niche. So that knocks that one out of the park for me.
Yep.
Hearthstone. Also kind of in that niche-ish...
Not kind of. Same in the thing.
Niche market.
You gotta be...
Not accessible to everybody.
Yep.
So that one knocks out. Now, Middle Earth, Shadow of Mordor, I actually really feel was probably the strongest contender of these noms for this win. So when it came out that it did not win, I was like,
ooh. And Dragon Age Inquisition did.
Which is, it was bittersweet for me because I am playing Dragon Age Inquisition right now.
And you do enjoy
it. And I do enjoy it. I enjoy it immensely.
Is it game of the year for you?
Eerily enough.
Say it.
No.
Say it.
No.
What's your game of the year? Say it. Say it.
No.
Say it.
No.
Yes.
Destiny.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And remember all that shit you talked at E3?
I know.
Remember? And then when it was coming out, and you're like, not even getting on the demo, and then I browbeat you into the demo, and you were like, and my money went down on the digital. You want to know something?
I feel like Destiny to me is that hot dude at, like, a club or, like, a bar who negs you. So, like, you're kind of like, oh, no. I want nothing to do with it. Whatever. He thinks my friend's hotter. And that was my stance. Like, I'm not even going to bother. And it got under my skin. I'm like, well, let me see what's going on with this. And then I was like, fuck. He's totally my type. And that's what happened. So I'm surprised it did not make the nom list. I really am. But, I mean, out of the nominees, I would have rather have seen Middle Earth take
it. Yeah, out of the nominee pool, I really thought that Mordor was going to take it. Because Mordor is an amazing game.
They both are. But I feel like, one, Dragon Age Inquisition came out really close in that market to get its nod. Like, a lot of these games have been out long enough that enough people have had exposure. So, I mean, the numbers for Dragon Age Inquisition had to have been outstandingly out there to justify its nomination, which I'm assuming, mind you, because I'm not in that pool, I don't know, I'm assuming that that's what happened, and it got its nod from that. But it hasn't been out long enough, I feel, for everyone to fully have absorbed it and appreciated it I don't feel it earned the nod, its nom, the right way. That's what I feel is what's up.
Again, I think that a game that's going to get a nod for Game of the Year, to your point, needs to be a game that's been out for more than a month.
Yep. Has to be accessible by all.
It should be accessible, or it should be something that is perceived as being accessible by all. Because there's some people that are attracted to a game, and then they get into it, and it's way above their skill set.
Well, I mean,
but it's got to be a highly desirable game by the entirety of the community.
And I mean, Dragon Age, we've all been sitting there waiting for Inquisition for a
y'all
long time.
Y'all have been sitting waiting for Inquisition. I have not been waiting for Inquisition.
You were waiting for Assassins.
I was waiting for Assassins. Which
and who got the better? And who got the better game?
You got the better.
Game. We did.
You got the better.
Yep. We did.
I'm not, dude.
Dragon Age Inquisition has better Unity than Assassin's Creed.
I see what you did there. I see what you did there. No, one of these days Unity is going to be good. But here's one day. But here's the upside of that.
There's a musical about one day things getting better. It was called Les Miserables.
Wait. Panda. Which is French. Here's the funny thing, though. Right? But here's the funny thing, though. The upside of that is because things were so messed up with Unity coming out, I'm going to get Far Cry 4 for free.
And that's the end of the show.
So who got the better game? Me!
Okay. Because good games don't give other good games for free. Only bad games give you better games to make you not think so much about the bad game.
So that. But hey, you know what? Still getting Far Cry 4 for free. Now, personally, I think that Mordor should have taken it. I wasn't surprised that Dragon Age took it.
Neither
just because Dragon Age is a very well done game.
Yep.
The community loves it. And the industry... Wait, let me finish my thought.
Okay.
And the industry respects it.
Can I speak now?
Sure.
And they fixed the problems from 2. And
so
they incorporated the awesomeness parts from 1. From Origins, rather. Okay.
So that.
Yeah.
Frankly, I think there are some games that should have been considered for Game of the Year that were not. you know, I love that Bayonetta got a nod and was even included in that, but I don't think that it really had a chance for Game of the Year.
It didn't have a leg to stand on.
Something like that. I am surprised that Destiny wasn't in there, but Inquisition was. Because if we're going on time as far as when it
Destiny's
was released,
been out much longer than Inquisition.
Ah, yep. I think that, personally for me, I think that having a category for indie kind of gave people the ability to exclude indie from Game of the Year, and I don't think that that's fair.
What about great indie games like Journey and Limbo and...
Well, Journey's not new, so Journey wouldn't have been...
No, but I'm just saying, but you shouldn't shut off indies, because indies have broken the
This is what I'm... And so that's what I'm saying, is, like, I really would have liked to have seen an independent...
Get at least a nod.
For a nomination in there, and I think that because there was a Best Independent Game category, that then kind of excused it, and I don't
think they have their own category to be the best in. They're not going to be in this one.
Because if you're going to do that, well, I'm like, well, there's a category for Best Action, and Dragon Age won that, so that should exclude them from Game of the Year then, by that theory? Best Action, the other thing that they took.
it was Best Role-Playing.
Yeah. So, I'm like, if you're going to use that logic to exclude them, then they should have been excluded for Game of the Year. So, I think that I would have liked to have seen an independent in there. And I think that there are so many to pick from, but I think that, like, having Never Alone or This War of Mine would have been a great independent to have up for Game of the Year. And I think that as we move forward, you'll start to see that. Personally, which you'll hear me talk about pretty much on any podcast that has me as we start going into our seasons where we do wrap-ups and start picking our games of the year and doing our own, you know, best action games and things like stuff. It should come as no surprise to anyone that my game of the year is Destiny. I can't stop playing that game.
I really wish that I could disagree with you, but I'm at a state right now that I cannot.
I can't stop playing
it. If that changes, you all will hear.
Can't stop playing it. I'm hopeful, however, that the landscape is going to change looking at some of the games that are coming. You know, I think that we'll be sitting here at this time next year, and we're going to be talking about how many things Witcher 3 and Uncharted 1 and, you know, deservedly picked up.
Yes.
I'm excited about that. So, all in all, like, I have to say, I, for the most part, enjoyed the Game Awards show. My only, like, suggestions are it was too long.
Okay.
It definitely could have been shortened. I think that keeping it under 3 hours would be great.
Oh my gosh, yes.
I think that doing a pre-show where you award the awards to categories that you're not going to do on screen...
Would have been a good idea.
Would have been great.
Which would have reduced some time.
Instead of trying to, like, work them in as natural, and I'm doing air quotes here...
I see that.
...conversations that happen in the audience... because that just seemed a little disjointed, I think would be great. I think maybe getting union labor to work the sound would be phenomenal for them, because there were times where, like, mics weren't working, so you didn't hear people singing or talking.
Oh, that sounds kind of important.
Or, you know, the chiptune guy was playing and you didn't really hear it, and there was some guy in the audience or some guy who was near somebody with a mic on, because every time he woohooed, you heard it.
Woohoo!
More than anything else.
It's a me, Mario!
Maybe it wasn't Mario.
It could be Mario.
And I think that maybe toning down the amount of quote-unquote world premiere,
Klaxon! Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba! World premiere! We're not MTV in the 90s.
Well, there's not that many things that are premiering, that are world premieres. So I think, like, cutting down on some of those would be great. But ultimately, where I ended the night, and it's no bullshit, it was better than any VGA that I'd ever watched.
Okay.
As far as the categories that were selected, and for the most part, who really won and took things home from that night, I congratulate Jeff Keighley, because it is not easy to put together an award show, to get a venue, to get motion graphics, to get people together on voting and what that piece looks like, to coordinate getting people to show up to your event and getting that thing broadcast, to pull it off really takes a lot of work and effort, and you've got to love it to really do it and carry it off, and that was really evident So I tip my hat to Jeff and his team. They really did a phenomenal job picking up that mantle that's being dropped by Spike, as Spike is the G-Force no more. But I think personally, if I was Jeff Keighley right now, I'd be sitting down with the Twitch team and be talking about how we brand this as the Twitch Video Game Awards. Completely leave it as an internet streaming thing, because you don't need a network anymore.
Right.
We are a community who is used to watching our celebrities on YouTube and on streaming media via their Twitch channels or YouTube channels or things like that. So I think having a streaming only award show makes
it's completely fitting for
and that you will have plenty of people that will watch it. You'll have plenty of people that'll want to advertise during it. So I think that I'd be talking about working right now with the Twitch team on how to brand this as the Twitch Game Awards and do it even bigger and better next year. I would like to see some community journalists on the jury panel, or at least be able to be part of the voting other than the fan awards. I think that, you know, and I'm not talking like the little rinky-dink, I got a Blogspot page, but, you know, the gamertag radios out there and the Screw Attacks and, you know, those guys, I think, would bring a lot to the table. And sure, if you wanted to extend an invitation to us, we would definitely attend.
Yes. Part of it,
for sure. You know, but I think that there's...
I'd love to come to your event.
Well, we could have gone. We could have bought tickets and gone, but, you know, flights to Vegas last minute.
There's no working.
You know, dovetailing it with the PlayStation experience, I think, makes a lot of sense, especially if they're going to continue doing that. But, so there you have it. Our thoughts in a nutshell. Pandas on a conquest for bird
conquest! And to be the best artist in the world.
And, I'm playing Destiny. So, to check out all the different stuff that we're writing about, our holiday gift recommendations, they're up on EGM. There's more to come, so make sure that you're checking those guys out at egmnow.com/electricsisterhood. You will find our podcast every week on our website, www.electricsisterhood.com. You can also find it in the iTunes Music Store, either on your desktop or on your iOS device using the podcast application by searching for the Eshcast and subscribing. You'll also find us in the Microsoft Store, on Stitcher Radio, and on VogNetwork.com. The episode airs on Tuesday, right before Anime Jam Session, so make sure that you bounce over to VogNetwork.com. Check out some of the amazing shows that are there on the network, including ours. Make some new friends. Pop in, interact, be part of the community. And when I talk about community, don't forget the rest of the Esh Network, because we got more shows than just us. On Tuesdays, you can catch a brand new episode of the No Borders, No Race podcast, hosted by our homeboy, KBD, King Baby Duck. If it's indie, it's going to be on No Borders, No Race, so make sure that you tune in. Check that out. On Wednesdays, when you need beats for your feeds, then you want to go to geekagro.com and grab the brand new episode of the Geek Agro podcast, which is put together by our homeboy, Deuces Wild. Trust us, it's an amazing mix. You want to put that in your ear holes. And on Thursdays, if you've got issues...
He's got issues.
Y'all can have issues together. The Issues Guy Issues Program. Call in live, be part of the show. Share your questions, thoughts, whatever is bouncing around in your brain. Trust us, it'll be addressed by the Issues Guy on the Issues Program. So be part of that. And then for the rest of the week, keeping your nerd needs satiated, we are all about the socials. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/landofesh. We are on Twitter at ESH News. That's all the news, new articles, new podcasts as soon as we put them out. Things that we're reading on the net that we think are really interesting, trust us. If you want to know about what's going on in the world of video games and geekery, then follow our Twitter handle. And with that, it's time for me to turn to my sister and say, "Hey, yo, sis.
Hey.
What should you dig in this week?
Nugget.
Aww.
Eshdog the 4th.
Eshdog the 4th.
Aww.
That's what I'm digging.
Well, it's kind of hard not to dig.
What are you digging this week?
I gotta be honest with you. I'm just really digging the video game community. Like, when you look at the things that we are able to put together and we're able to do and accomplish together, it's really quite amazing. When you think of Child's Play, you think of Extra Life, you think of our own award shows, and just the amount of love being shed on independent gaming and mashups and all that kind of stuff, and Let's Plays, and just the whole industry. Like, I'm fucking digging the community.
Cool.
So with that, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next week, guys.
Stay classy.